crouching into position. It stands to be the way. I think it's the countdown. In fact, that's exactly the word I used in my description there. It is the countdown to conferences. That tends to put me under pressure. That's when you sort of think about what are all the things I do every day? Data breach stuff, some blog post stuff, muck around with IoT and 3D print, like all that stuff. I can do that at my own pace, but things that are conference talks where you have made a commitment to deliver a presentation at a point in time, it's not negotiable. You can't just go, oh, I don't feel like doing that today. Well, you can defer it. But as you get closer and closer to the time, you got to be more and more ready. I was talking to Darren Kitchen last night at Ozcert. We'll come back to that. And we're talking about preparation for keynotes. He's doing a keynote this morning. I want to go and have a watch of. And he said it's like law of diminishing returns, right? Like the more you practice one of these things, the less you get out of each subsequent one. I was like, yeah, but that's kind of the point, because I want to get to the point where there's no return on continuing to practice, because I've done it so many times, I'm just nailing it every single time and it just doesn't get better. So that's my thoughts anyway. Thomas is here, evening. Your summer on the other side of the world. Hope you're having a better evening than I am debugging an EC2 instance randomly dropping its IP addresses. Yep, I'm having a better time than that. Having a much better time than that. My time today, couple of weeks, has been going printing cryptexes, 3D printed cryptexes. Now, I showed a cryptex on this show, a few weeks ago. I have since printed many of them for one simple reason. Now, the one I showed the other week, we're going to use at our talk at NDC in Oslo. Now, just for reference, there is a whole box full of 3D printed things, most of which I think will be coming to Oslo. Here's a good example. Some of the really cool stuff. Because what I want to do is go, what are all the things that we have seen printed before? And just as a recap, this is the talk that my 11-year-old daughter and Elle are doing together at NDC, which is separate to the opening keynote, which I'm doing, which I need to spend some time on. What are all the cool things that we have seen during our 3D printing journey where we've seen it and just gone, oh, wow, I didn't know you could do that. That's awesome. Vases. This is cool. So this is a 3D printed vase. It's also using a transparent filament. Now, this vase has got a big nozzle. There's a 0.6mm nozzle. We'd normally use a 0.4mm nozzle for most things. And they're big fat layers, 0.3mm layers. So as you run your finger over it, you probably hear it. It's like a little bit scratchy because you can feel the individual layers. Morning, Stephen. G'day. Thank you for joining. Wayne, excuse me, everybody else. So, great example. Other thing. This one's great. So this is a 3D printed catapult. Now, you might be wondering, how do you 3D print a catapult? Well, you're actually 3D printing the spring. So if you look on the side here, as I pull back the lever, I need to put that where my face is so it gets in focus. As I pull back the lever, it actually compresses this spring, and it's got a little latch here. And we put the little latch on like that, and now the cannon is loaded. Now, you may notice it's got a bit of orange on this crossbar. The reason is that we had printed all of this in a filament called PETG, which is used for many parts that you make mechanical things out of, because PETG is not as brittle as, say, the filaments that we've created the vase out of. This cannon has got so much power, the first time we let it off, it snapped the crossbar. So we printed it again in PC Blend and put this little buffer here. This allegedly can shoot 80 feet. 80 feet. So that's going to be fun. You don't see a lot of projectiles at tech conferences. We're going to change that. Loads of other things. this was a good one. Try not to break this. We did this one just the other day. This is a Flexi Dragon. Now, I don't know if this is childish or geeky or cool. Let me know, but I'm kind of enjoying it. So this all prints in one place, but you see it actually is articulated. And when you have a look at the way it does the joins, it just prints little hooks and everything is hooked into each other. So it's already printed, joined. And then this thing, I mean, right, I'm 6'5". This is almost as long as my arm, which is kind of cool. So loads and loads of stuff like that. Stephen's impressed. Thank you. Glad someone's impressed. Oh, here's a fun one. This one here is my GitHub commits for last year. So GitHub has got a service called Skyline. So if you go to skyline.github.com and you plug in anyone's username, you don't have to be authenticated, so long as their commit volumes are public. Doesn't even have to be the commits themselves that are public, but the commit volumes, and they share that. You can generate an STL file, which is the 3D model, and then you can print it. So this shows me, I was pretty busy around the end of the year. I wasn't doing much here. When was that? I don't know. Let's call it 3/4 of the way through the year. And you look at it from the top and you see which days you didn't commit code, which is pretty cool. Now, I got onto all that because in front of me, I have all of these cryptexes. Now, the other day I showed a cryptex, which would have looked pretty much like this one just here. So 3D printed again. It's a combination of a single color prints and a multi-material print for things like where we've got little gold inlays. So the multi-material print is when you have up to 5 different filaments and the printer can go and choose a filament, extrude it, print a little bit of it, push it back up, grab another one, pull that down and print with that. So you can do that multicolor printing. So the cryptex is like the cryptex from the Da Vinci Code, where you can set a code and there's a little arrows here. And when you set the code, the thing opens. When the code's not set, it doesn't open. This is so effective that we messed up the code on one of them the other day and it resulted in an angle grinder. Just to take off the caps at the end, and then I had to print those again. So what we're doing now, there's one here, you can see there's a little piece of paper in here, a little note. Made one of those, made another one. Looks like this, a little red and transparent one. Made another one with the full gold theme, just there. Made another one here that, yeah, I spent a lot of time printing. Another one here, the inverted colors in the green, I actually quite like. I think this is probably Elle's favorite. There's a purple one. And one that we're just busily constructing now, which is going to be the final one, is made out of a filament which has, it's like a metallic purple, and then there's another one which is like a metallic blue. And as we piece this together, these are the number wheels that go inside. It's got this little cog, and the cog has got a little cutout. I've got it at 12 o'clock here. And depending on where you put that cutout on the letter wheel, that there is set to, say, K. When that slides on over the tube in the end, it has to be in position K. Otherwise, it can't slide the tube out because there's little teeth that catch it. Now, the reason we've done all of this is that these are Elle's birthday party invitations. I've never put so much work into a child's birthday party before. So we have printed 6 different cryptexes, each one with the name of her friend set as the code and the invite inside, and then she'll rotate all the wheels, and then I'll have to get those codes right before it gets given to the girl with the correct code. So that's a ring from something. That's where a lot of my time has been going this last week, preparing for the 3D printing talk and printing Elle's birthday invitations. Stephen feels bad for his 3D printer that I got after Troy first got his. Has only printed a handful of cog fidgets and mini model of Stargate Atlantis. It is advantageous, I don't know your personal situation, Stephen, it is advantageous having a kid that enjoys doing it. That's helped a lot. The presentation that we have prepared for NDC, I think is looking fantastic. Now, I've done a lot of, I must have done hundreds of different conference talks before, but I have never put so much effort into a talk as I have with this one in terms of all of the work that goes on in the background. So I'm kind of curious to see how that goes. 2 weeks from today, we will be heading back to Europe, back over to Oslo, and then it will be the week after that that we actually do this talk. And I do the opening keynote as well. Now, I think I've got a really good angle on this opening keynote, and I'm not going to share it here in case anyone
is watching this and then comes on to the event, because I'd like to keep it a little bit of a surprise. But I think I found a really, really good angle for an opening keynote. Do have to finish the slides, though. All right, speaking of conferences, AusCert here on the Gold Coast. So AusCert is arguably our premier info security event in the Gold Coast, in Australia every year. It's always here on the Gold Coast at my home. It used to be a 10-minute walk that way, which was fantastic. It is now a 15-minute drive the same direction. So we've been doing a bunch of AusCert things this week. We've been along to a whiskey night at Hactiv the other night, gala dinner last night, which was great fun. Mentioned Darren Kitchen before. He's doing the opening keynote this morning. If you don't know who Darren is the man behind the Wi-Fi Pineapple, which was such a big part of so many of my talks for a long time there. So I've known Darren for many, many years. First time I went and spoke at NDC Oslo, which would be 10 years ago next month, it was with a Wi-Fi Pineapple. So he's been great, and it's great having visitors from overseas here on the Gold Coast, and you get to share this freaking amazing place with them. And it is amazing though too. The sun is out, it's winter, it's 16 degrees Celsius at the moment. It's perfect here. Joe's here, g'day Joe. Stephen keeps telling his daughter, 13 years old, about you and your daughter and the stuff you've done, but we're not quite got there yet. One day, hopefully. Who knows? It might be one of those things she goes hot and cold on. My son, Ari, who's now 14, was more into this early on. And now I think Al's a bit more into it. But I think finding an angle where there's also that opportunity for her to talk about it at a conference and get to go and feel pretty special is a good driver for her. So also here on the Gold Coast, I'm going to go and check out that keynote in a moment. I'm then coming back later on in the day to do a speed debate. It is a lighthearted, fun thing. I do it every year at AusCert. There's myself and probably 10 other people sit there on a panel and you argue for and against random shit, basically pre-chosen random shit topics. So I'll be back there this afternoon to do that. Now, put in my notes here. Phishing attacks uptick, and I was tweeting about this during the week. I have just anecdotally seen a massive uptick in the number of phishing attacks that are happening lately. And I had a period there in 24 hours, I think I had, here, I said in the thread here, I had three different phishing attacks, all alleged to be from the Commonwealth Bank, one of our big four banks here in Australia, our biggest bank, a big one. Now, of course, it's not Combank, it is Fishers. It's got all the hallmarks of phishing, but it was just fascinating to have three of them happen very, very close to each other. Now, what do you do? They say you're meant to just hang up and then report it to the bank. I like to have more fun than that. I do a combination of a Lenny Troll if I'm sitting at the keyboard. Now, I'm going to drop into the chat here the Lenny Troll soundboard. This is a URL. It sort of works better if you can just play this yourself here. So dropping these in the chat here. Lenny chat. What is it? Lenny soundboard. So Lenny is an elderly gentleman with hearing problems. He's a little mumbly. This soundboard has got 16 different things that you can play, 16 different tracks that you can play when someone calls up. So I'll turn my volume up and you might hear it back through the speakers here.
Hello, this is Lenny.
Right, hello, this is Lenny. Fine. So someone calls up, you play that from the soundboard. But Lenny can't hear real good.
Sorry, I can barely hear you there.
And it goes on and on and on, and then he gets a little bit rambly. So here you go.
Well, you know, with the world finances the way they are, I know, you know, we're not allowed to spend as much as what we were. I mean,
anyway, and he keeps going. So that is one approach for the persistent scammer. The other thing I like to do is, especially if I'm in the car with the kids, is whichever kid is closest gets to take the call. Challenge is, how long can you keep the scammer going for? Now, Al took a call, one of these ones, during the week. And she was going okay until the scammer asked how much money was in her bank account, and she said $1 billion. I was like, sweetie, you gotta be like a little bit believable, you know? You got to be believable enough to keep them on the hook, stretch it out. I think it's character building. Anyway, Plato, great meeting you last night, Troy. You're an Australian icon. Thanks, mate. That's cool. That was a good night, wasn't it? It was a very good night. I wonder how long it went on. I think we left about 10 o'clock or something and then got up at 4:35 o'clock this morning because stuff. Stephen, yeah, Dr. Evil, 1 billion comes to mind. So, I mean, seeing an uptick of those, I'm still getting those freaking SMSs like every single night for toll road bill payment or something. It's just, it is nuts just how, I'm just flicking back through my messages here. It's nuts how many of these I've got. Oh, that one's legitimate. But a lot of these other ones are junk. Now, in amongst this, one of these is from a mate of mine whose wife has just had his account, or her account rather, taken over as well. Someone went full takeover on this lady, everything from her it sounds like her email to her social accounts to finding credit card details, which was interesting because he said, you know, my wife's email account got taken over and the Facebook account, and there's been fraudulent charges on the credit card. And I'm sort of going, how do you join those dots? And I assume at some point in time she's emailed credit card details to someone. Which makes you wonder, how many times have you been asked, like by a hotel or some other service you're making a booking on, to send either your credit card details in plain text or a scan of a PDF or something like that? Now, mind you, credit card, she'll get that refunded. She'll obviously get a new card. She'll have to update her direct debits, and that's it. I would be much more mortified about someone being in my email than what I would about them getting my credit card. But ideally, like them not to have either of those things. All right, last thing on the on the official agenda today, unless something else interesting comes up, is we have our first Have I Been Pwned employee, which is a massive, massive leap forward. Now, just as a recap, I never expected it to be a serious project. I wouldn't have given it such a stupid name if I did. Have I Been Pwned was a pet project, and it launched in December 2013 just to answer that question. Have I been pwned? Have I been in a data breach? And there were five breaches in there, which was predominantly just Adobe. And there was Gawker and Stratfor and I think Sony Pictures and maybe one or two others. And that was it. And now we're at, how many data breaches are now? 700-something, I don't know that much. 774 data breaches, just over 13 billion records in there. And all of the numbers of this service have just gone stupid. We've got nearly 5 million subscribers to the notification service. I haven't checked this for a while, but we're doing around about 8 billion requests to pwn passwords every month. 8 billion requests, largely through the support of Cloudflare because they host all these services. Let me actually log on to the Cloudflare dashboard as we biometrics our way into the thing and have a look. It's normally when I look at this, I'm doing one of these live streams, I'm like, yeah, it's about it. Why don't I actually last check that? So as I'm looking this up, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, but also more and more important. And you sort of, you get a bit of a sense of that when you start to look at how many dependencies there are out there on this service. Okay, so it's ticked down a little bit. We're at 7.63 billion, only 7.63 billion requests in the last 30 days to pwn passwords, which is still pretty wild. Oh, the referrers are interesting too. So, pwned passwords, I'm off on a tangent here, but I just find this data interesting. Pwned passwords is an API which many services will call from server-side. Now, if they call it server-side, it's just an HTTPS request. They can put whatever user agent they want there. There's no auth. We don't know who's using it. But a bunch of services also integrate it to the client side. So whilst you're there and you're entering your password on the password field, and let's say you change focus, then the browser can pick that password up and hit the pwned passwords API directly, which means it is the client itself making the request, or there's always a client. It's the browser itself making the request from the end user's machine, and they're making that request via the browser, which is going to pass a referrer header. So we can see the top referrers. Number one top referrer with almost 6 million is TradingView.com. Now, I'm happy naming these because you can see this in the network tools anyway if you go to the website. Clearly, they're not trying to keep any of that secret. What does TradingView.com do? Look first, then leap. The best trades require research. Okay. It is literally a trading platform. That's cool. Number two, Telstra here in Australia. They're almost 5 million requests. Number three, Opera.com. That's cool. Now, interestingly, TradingView is not only number one by a fairly significant margin, but it's also about number six because they've got a different subdomain there. So TradingView is putting through nearly 8 million requests a month. That's a lot of people use that service. Wow. What's Hims? Is Hims clothing? I don't know. I'll get back to Stefan and the employee thing in a moment. Have great sex. All right. Regrow hair, lose weight, tackle anxiety, have longer sex. Great sex, longer sex. And also get smooth skin. So apparently all that's, I don't know, let's call it, is it the vitamin industry? Interesting. Oh, well, I've learned something today. WealthSimple.com, dpgmedia.nl, login to dpgmedia. Who are they? Something in the Netherlands. Look at the comments while I'm doing that. Joe says, congrats to Stefan and you. Hopefully having him on board can put, I should actually talk about Stefan in a moment, can take some pressure off you. Stephen says, how goes the increasing hits with CoinHive? I've got to do something on that. I've got to write something up. It'd be interesting. Though I'm getting the, I still speak some Dutch. I had 2 years living in the Netherlands. This website wants to set cookies. Okay, fine, do it. Oh, yeah, whatever. What could go wrong? Now we see privacy policy. Jeez, my shit experience this is. Sorry, guys. There's just like a publishing company. Forhers.com. Oh, is that like Hims? What's Forhers.com? That's another sex thing. There's a lot of that on the internet. Thicker, fuller hair starts here. That's another healthcare thing. Weight loss for everybody. Sounds very similar, doesn't it? Hims for hers. Rushbet.co. Colombian? I think it's Colombian, isn't it? What else have we got here? Meister.co. Something else with a CL TLD. Is that Chile? Interesting. Anyway, point is... Excuse me, there's a whole lot of stuff here that's using Have I Been Pwned as a big dependency on it. And I wrote in the announcement blog post about hiring someone that there's sort of this founder's paradox where, you know, I've started this service. It's kind of like a life's work of blood, sweat and tears and everything else has gone into it. And I've gone through a lot of crazy shit to be here now. No, nothing to do with the runnings of the site. There's a whole other story here. This is definitely going to be a beer discussion another time. It's just been a massive, massive part of my life. And to recognize that you need to let go of some of it and have other people write some of the code or have access to some of the systems is a very hard thing to do for anyone, let alone when it's been running for 10 years as it is, and it's dealing with a whole bunch of pretty sensitive information when you think about what's in data breaches. And I'm more conscious than probably just about anyone. You're one bad commit away from having a very, very bad time. We've all seen this happen before. So it's a massive thing, Have I Been Pwned? And it can't just be dependent on me. Yeah, this is really the realization that's been hitting me. Probably first started hitting me back in 2019 when I went through that M&A thing, which thank God didn't work out. But it's clear we had to have more redundancy. And Charlotte has been fantastic over the last few years. She's done a lot of work on all the other things that have to happen in the background. The amount of time we have to spend doing everything from like formal documentation stuff through to lots and lots of legal stuff happens in the background. Fortunately, not bad legal stuff, but just stuff to make sure that we're doing everything as best we possibly can. That is extraordinarily time-consuming, completely not fun in every way imaginable. And she does all that. She effectively does everything that she is able to do that I did before. Now, she's not a coder. She's not processing data breaches. She's not pushing commits or anything like that. So all of that has been on my shoulders. Now, Stefan, who probably needs no introduction, and he's often here. I didn't tell him when I was going to do this. I don't want it to be like when I do my videos, you should be there. It's not that. Stefan was making open source contributions to the Pwn Passwords work very early on. He was integrating Pwn Passwords into EVE Online, where he used to work in Stefan's Icelandic. He lives in Reykjavik. He was doing a lot of integration with that. Stefan was actually in one of my Hack Yourself First workshops in 2018 in Oslo, so I've known him for a very long time. And earlier last year, he started doing some part-time work on Have I Been Pwn. We didn't make an announcement or anything like that. He had a full-time job at the time, and the work was fine with them, but it was just, it was piecemeal stuff, and we'd already spoken about him doing the open source bits. But not so long ago, we just had a bit of a chat, and he's like, you know, when am I going to come and work full-time? I was like, well, can we figure out how to make this work? And, you know, long story short, we found out how to make that work and allow him to resign from his other job and come and work full-time, which he'll start to do towards the end of the Northern Hemisphere summer, end of our winter, as it may be here. And that's going to be really cool because it means that a huge amount of the coding work that I was doing before can now go to him. And I was thinking about it the other day, like if I broke it down and I thought, how much time do I actually spend writing code, given that I also have to do all of the other stuff that's related to this? And it's probably quite a small amount. So to get someone on that can just focus on that, the actual volume of code being written is going to multiply many, many times over. Plus, he's much better at it than me because I haven't been doing much of it for a very long time. And he's very plugged into our ecosystems. He's a Microsoft MVP and has been for several years now, has good connections with inside that company and also many of the other organizations we work with, such as Cloudflare. So I'm really looking forward to getting him on and being able to start doing a combination of really optimizing what is happening under the covers, optimizing for cost. Cost is something that does start to creep with cloud as things get bigger and bigger, optimizing for sustainability. I mean, one of the things that I've spoken about on this channel many times before is moving the back end from Azure Table Storage into Azure SQL. And we're right on the tail end of that work now, and Stefan's done a huge amount of that. That's going to allow us to do point-in-time restores and geo-replication and ad hoc queries and all sorts of other things we couldn't do before. And it probably goes without saying, but the big thing for us, well, the two big things for us to get over is relinquishing control and the cost of hiring someone, because at the moment that, other than Charlotte and I, what we pay ourselves in order to sustain things, that is a massive, massive financial commitment when you actually hire a person. And until then, it's just been, you know, my wife and I running it. So it's a big leap of faith on our behalf, but there's no one else I'd trust it to. You know, there really isn't. And maybe Stefan will watch this later on and hear nice things said about him. But it's someone who we have a huge amount of trust in. It is a personal friend we've known for many, many years. And we feel really confident starting to give more control to him. And honestly, the goal over the course of time is for me not to have to be there. Not because I want to just sail off into the sunset. I want to keep doing this. But if I have a shark, croc, spider, snake, jet ski related incident and I can suddenly no longer do this, I don't want this project to wither and die. I want it to continue to grow and be a valuable resource. So that is why we're doing this. And we're able to do this as well in large part because we put a cost on those domain searches last year. So August last year was when we said, look, for the biggest domains, for the 40% of the biggest domains that people are searching, you're going to have to start to pay some money. And honestly, we've had very, very little pushback there. Probably the main edge condition there has been people with personal domains where they end up with lots of email addresses on them and end up in lots of breaches. I think outside of that, and we've got ways of dealing with that, outside of that, it's actually been very well received. Especially when you think, well, We're taking companies like Pfizer, where I spent 14 years, who from memory was worth a couple of hundred billion dollars, and we're asking them to pay a little bit, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of money, literally, I think a few dollars a day, if you want to use this service. And that has allowed us to fund what we're doing with Stefan. And I think inevitably over time, we'll have to expand it a bit further to make, to really to make me fully redundant. That's going to be the goal. So that's that. I think give us until the last quarter of the year when Stefan's onboarded and producing stuff, and then we'll actually get to see some really cool new stuff being built and pushed. I'm super excited about that, and I'm very, very happy to have Stefan on board. Okay, I've got to wrap this up because I want to go and watch Darren's keynote at the AusCert event. And thanks for watching. I'll come back to you next Friday. See you, folks.